Hi, I'm Professor Allen.
And I'm Emily, and you're listening to the Short Box Showcase.
Lucky Episode 13, Conventions and Cosplay. Or, nerds hanging out together and sometimes dressing up.
The purpose of Short Box Showcase is to talk about comic-related topics that fall outside of our individual podcasts.
Today, we're going to talk about our individual histories with comic book conventions and dressing up in character.
Now, these are two separate topics, but they do overlap a fair amount, so we will be jumping back and forth a bit between them.
I wanted to start with each of our histories at comic book conventions, and since I'm older, my history starts first. The comic book conventions that I went to when I was a kid would probably be considered shows today, as a convention and a show have sort of taken on different meanings.
Right. A con, which is short for convention, is kind of like any other convention, like an academic or trade convention. It's a place for people with a shared interest to socialize and exchange ideas. Unlike those two examples, nerd cons also include crazy costume contests, late night parties, and a whole lot of booze.
You've never been to the American Accounting Association's West Coast Regional Meeting, have you?
Oh, apparently not. Apparently I was wrong.
Nobody parties like a bunch of CPAs hopped up on Dr. Pepper 10.
Oh, fair enough. I stand corrected.
So, the conventions that I went to back when I was in high school would have been what we considered shows today. I don't remember any celebrities. I don't remember any Artist Alley. It was just all about buying comic books.
Right. Now, I wonder, does this have something to do with sort of the availability of back issues? Because you've talked before, when we talked about the rise of the direct distribution market, that you used to have to order back issues from a service. It seems like this might have been sort of a way to get back issues if your local store didn't keep them.
Definitely. This was one of the ways to get those back issues. And certainly in these big dealer rooms inside hotel ballrooms had a lot more space than a comic book store did. And I don't remember if at that point I had even been to many comic book stores, simply because, like you said, we were picking up our regular comics at the drugstore at 7-Eleven. And so if you missed an issue, there really wasn't much of a place to find it. And that's where these conventions came in handy. I remember the first couple that I went to, I was young enough that my mom drove me and dropped me off. I want to say the Holiday Inn in Silver Spring, Maryland. I'm pretty sure if you look at some of those comic book ads from the late 70s, early 80s, you might actually see this one on the list, in those ads for comic book conventions and things. I'm pretty sure that even the first time that I went to one of these, so I may have been 14 maybe, that she brought along a couple paperbacks and actually stayed at the hotel lobby and waited for me just because she wasn't quite sure what was going to go on at the comic book convention. And there must have been, a $5 admission fee. So she just sent me in with that and whatever, $20 to spend. And she waited for me. Then I think it was the later ones when she saw that it actually was a real semi-legitimate thing.
It was just a bunch of nerds in a room buying comic books. And it wasn't some sort of attempt to recruit for the Illuminati or something like that, as far as we know.
But it was a magical place. So I remember Mom dropping me off, picking me up a couple of hours later. Then eventually, by the time 11th grade came around, I had made a couple of comic book buddies, Kenny and John, and I'm pretty sure we started driving by ourselves to the cons at that point. But we'd go once or twice a year with the big long list of what you needed. And that was where you'd do some discovery as well. I specifically remember Infinity Inc., maybe America versus Justice Society, as being specific miniseries that they just had in, buy all four issues, or buy the first three issues of this title for a discount price. And the nice thing was there were so many dealers there that you could say, well, you're selling these ones for $1.50 each. Down there, he's got all three for $3.50, so what can you work for me and be able to work those deals? So that's sort of my image of what a comic convention is, and that's certainly very different from what they are now.
Right. Now a lot of cons have grown into being these sorts of pop culture and media centers. Like, you know, the most famous of all of these cons is Comic-Con, which a lot of people have kind of complained basically doesn't have anything to do with comics anymore. It's all about advertising for new movies and TV shows and selling merchandise and things like that. And a lot of the merchandise is actually from things that are still parts of sort of nerd culture. Stuff related to Big Bang Theory or Chuck or whatever, like things that are kind of nerd staples, but don't have any connection to comics whatsoever.
The sorts of things that you might be able to buy at the ThinkGeek website, for example.
Exactly. I'm pretty sure that ThinkGeek sets up like a store that takes up like a third of one of the rooms.
I would imagine.
And just sells all of their stuff. And you can get Game of Thrones bobbleheads and you can buy t-shirts and whatever. And there are lots of panels and celebrities and things, but it is more about meeting celebrities, going to signings, going to panels about your favorite shows.
Artist commissions.
Exactly, artist commissions. Listening to people talking about like the behind the scenes of shows and drumming up interest in old shows and things like that. Like trying to get Firefly back off the ground, which has been a staple of Comic-Con for a decade now.
Well, things adapt and change over time, and part of that, the finance and economics professor in me will tell you part of that is the way the marketplace has changed. We talked mm-hmm. about without comic book stores, and certainly obviously without online or eBay, that was the place to buy the back issues that you missed when you were a kid. But now you can do that in so many other ways that the role of the convention has had to change, to modernize, to keep up with the times, to still be reactive and reflective of what people want.
Right. And I want to pull something off of your story that you were talking about there. It sounds almost like a bazaar, like you have that ability to sort of haggle a little bit with people. Now, many, many years later, I went to a trade show, which, as you pointed out, is sort of the equivalent that we have today. And I was incredibly out of sorts because I thought it was going to be a convention. It said con in the name of the event, and it was not what I was expecting at all. But what I found there was it was mostly for collectors. So everything was really expensive, and there was no haggling. I bought two trades that day, Powers and the Greatest Joker Stories Ever Told, because they were the cheapest collected volumes that I could find in the entire convention at $12 a piece. I was shocked by how expensive things were because it was catering much more to the collector completionist sort of mindset. It wasn't what I was used to of cons, where at cons have dealer rooms and artist alleys, things like that, where they are usually a little more flexible. The artist alleys more so, that if there are people that are there selling prints and selling art, that they might have a special, you know, buy three for $40, right. But right. You might be able to be like, okay, well, if I buy four, will you give it to me for $45? And there's a little bit of wiggle room there. I tried to negotiate with these guys, and the dirty looks that I got from the sellers, it was an experience.
That's funny. So your experience was that they'd basically just set up their retail store
yep.
at this location as opposed to mine, which is more of a flea market
yeah.
type of atmosphere almost.
Yeah. I did look, and there were a couple, I think, 50-cent bins and dollar bins. But again, most of the stuff was that people had brought, like, the things that you see behind the glass
right.
in their store. Someone had the Galactus trilogy or something like that and had brought all of those in the glass case and had the whole case set up for $200 or something. That was the sort of stuff that they were selling. And
right.
It wasn't so much merchandising. There was a little bit of toy selling.
And the Professor Allen allowance had not quite enabled you
yeah.
to...
Like I said, I bought two things that day. I went in with $40 and I bought two things.
Now, you had an experience, one of the first cons you went to.
Was sort of an accident.
Was sort of an accident, yeah. Yeah, one of the first cons you went to was sort of an accident. It was an anime con that was held at the same location as something else you were going to, so...
Okay, here's what happened. When I was in high school, I was pretty heavily involved in our church's youth group. And I also had friends who were gigantic nerds. And several of those gigantic nerds, who were in the youth group, decided that they were going to skip this year's conference because there was this convention that they wanted to go to. And I really wanted to go with them, but I thought, you know, I really should stick it out. You know, I'm going to be there to support people and help out. You know, I got to do this. So they all buy their tickets and go to the convention, and I buy my ticket and I go to the conference.
The youth conference.
Yes. When we actually get to the convention center, where our youth conference was being held, and we all walk in our little, like, uniforms that have our little, like, youth group t-shirt and stuff. And as we're walking in, we pass all of these, like, 10-year-old girls in pink tutus and white boots. And we're like, okay, that's weird. We get about 150 feet further into the convention, and we see all of these people dressed up like Naruto characters. And we go, okay, that's a little bit weirder. What is going on? Then we look up, and it says on the giant banner hanging in the lobby, it's, you know, the Columbus Convention Center would like to welcome the Oasis Youth Conference, OhioCon, and the Mid-Central United States Nationals for Middle School Cheerleading.
So it was quite a mix of characters at that event.
Yeah, no, those are three groups that you would think would almost never have any contact with one another. And it made for a very interesting experience. I had a really good time at my conference, but during the downtime, when they take an hour or two break for you to go to lunch, I would just go and hang out in the hallway with all of the nerds. And one person actually, you know, thought I was part of the OhioCon group because I knew what I was talking about, and asked me if I'd lost my brochure. And I was like, well, I never actually got one. So he just gave me his and had all of these panels and all of these events. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. I'm sort of slowly starting to regret my decision that I made.
And you'd seen a few of your friends from youth group who had skipped the youth group convention to go to OhioCon.
That was an awkward bathroom encounter, let me tell you, that we just sort of ran into each other at the door. I was like, oh, hey, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? Well, this is where the conference is. This is where the convention is. Huh. That's weird. The highlight of the weekend, though, was that after I had that pamphlet, you know, I went back into our lesson or whatever we were doing, and I was reading through the pamphlet. One of our youth pastors came up to me and was like, hey, what's that you're reading? And I was like, oh, well, you know that there's that convention next door. One of the people who was there gave me the brochure that has all of the stuff that's going on. And he was like, oh, well, that's cool. Okay, I guess. But, you know, you got to stay here, though. I mean, you know, you can't just go wandering off. Like, I can tell in your eyes you kind of want to leave, but you can't go without, you know, like, adult supervision and stuff. You're under our care. And so, and I was like, yeah, I know. And then he sort of looks over my shoulder and goes, there's a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles panel? I was like, yeah. Okay, I'm going to tell the rest of the pastors that you and I, we're going to go, like, pray or something, and you and I, we're going to go up the stairs, and in 1 hour, we're going to meet back at the stairs. I'm going to go to the panel, you go do whatever you want, and then we'll come back, and we just won't tell anyone what we did. So my pastor and I decided to sneak out of the conference and go to the con.
Why am I hearing about this now for the very first time? Okay, no, not really. I thought that was awesome.
It was one of the greatest moments. So that was my first time attending OhioCon. And it was at that moment that I thought, yeah, I got to do this regularly. And I think I've gone 5 of the 7 following years. I will be going this year as well.
Now that event, OhioCon, we'll talk a little bit more about later on. But that is more specifically an anime con,
right,
than a comic book con. You've been to a little bit of both.
Right.
Can you sort of generally talk about those differences?
Well, the thing that's interesting about comic cons and anime cons is that comic cons have slowly become more like anime cons. The origin of the anime con, and I think actually OhioCon in particular, is that back in the 90s and the early 2000s, it was really hard to get anime on VHS back in the olden days. And there wasn't any networks that were showing it, and the internet wasn't really up to streaming video.
So I see where you're going here. In the same way that when I was young, I went to the Comic-Con to get the back issues that I couldn't find somewhere else, one of the highlights of going to anime cons was being able to get the anime books and or VHSs that you couldn't find elsewhere in the U.S.
Precisely. Again, this is back before Barnes & Noble recognized having a manga section could be really, really profitable. So if you were going to get manga, you had to actually get it from Japan. If you couldn't read Japanese, you had to get a fan translation of the manga. It was a dark day.
That sounds like a noble effort, but I don't know how effective that would be.
Exactly. It was a dark time for anime and manga consumption, mostly for anime. You know, the nice thing is, you know, we had the Lone Wolf and Cub translation. There were English translations of really well-known or really good series, but, you know, if you were a fan of, you know, magical girl genre stuff, you know, there would be English translations of Sailor Moon, and that was it. Nothing else in the genre was well enough known to get an actual legit English translation. You had to kind of get, like, these bootlegs, and same thing for anime. If you wanted Angel Cop on VHS, though I have no idea why you would want it, you couldn't get it anywhere.
Burn!
Angel Cop is not that horrible, but it is very 80s. You couldn't order it from Amazon. You couldn't get it from your local video store. Like, the only way you could get it is at these conventions. So since there wasn't really a place you could get these VHSs, if you knew someone who had a VHS of one of these series or shows that you really were interested in, that was a huge commodity. So what they would do is every anime fan would own 2, 5, 10 series, but they all owned different stuff. And so people would get together a lot of times at, you know, colleges or maybe at their local comic store for one night a week and set up viewing rooms where they would watch all of these different anime.
That you couldn't get any other way.
Exactly.
Or trade tapes back and forth, that sort of thing.
Exactly, because, you know, if you had a bootleg copy of Angel Cop, for example, that thing might have cost you $45 plus shipping. I mean, like, that is not something that everyone could get. But one person would be able to buy it and then share it with the group. And then someone else would have something. It shared the financial load among a group of people. And so that was a big thing, was anime viewing societies, things like that, that would be clubs people would form. And the origin of OhioCon, I believe, actually started from the Ohio State University. That they got together regularly and watched anime, and as the anime group got larger and larger and larger and larger, they decided to start renting out rooms in hotels instead of trying to meet on campus somewhere that had room for 150 people.
And then eventually that grew into more convention type
of scenario. Exactly. And then the bigger the group became, you know, students would bring their friends, so rather than just being a student club, it became, you know,
an organization.
Exactly.
Once you get above a certain size, you can invite in panelists and guests, and then it sort of grows on its own.
And that was the thing, is it started off as just watching shows, but then if there was a show that everyone really liked and wanted to talk about, then they started having discussions. And then at a certain point, it got big enough that there were a couple of people who knew a guy who knew a guy who knew a guy who used to go to college with one of the voice actors, and they could invite the voice actor to come and talk, and that was the start of panels and guests, and it just grew from there into this giant thing.
Now, this event specifically that you're talking about is OhioCon, which is an anime con primarily, and just explain the name. It's not OhioCon.
No, it is OhioCon. It's O-H-A-Y-O, con. And Ohio is a Japanesification of, hey there, hello, greetings, something like that. So it's a pun based on...
Because ohaya is a word that sort of means welcome or exactly. Hello, and it's obviously
and
also...
it sounds like Ohio, and we're in Ohio, O-H-I-O, and...
So it is Ohio-con.
Yes, it's a dumb pun, but it's cute.
When you explained it to me, I thought it was pretty funny. Now, in addition to the anime con that Emily's referencing, also in central Ohio, in the Columbus, Ohio area, is the annual Mid-Ohio con, which is a Wizard World con. And like we were saying before, to me, the Wizard World events have generally turned into much more pop culture events than strict comic book events.
Right.
But we were all set to go to one either 2010 or 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gotten sick, and so my health, I wasn't up to attending the con. I was just going to go and sort of have fun. It would have been my first con in a long, long time. And it was only after the fact that I learned that my favorite comic creator of all time, Mike Grell, was at that con. And I was just going to go sort of without even knowing the guest list. I was just going to go. And the problem is the last couple of years of Mid-Ohio Con, which is in the fall, the guest list has been less and less comic book and more star from an 80s action series
right.
or a movie panel or things that were just sort of less interesting to me. So I may have missed my one chance.
Yeah.
Heartbreak at the convention. Well, now that I'm so brokenhearted telling that story.
It's okay.
I think we need to take a break. I'm going to go cry.
All right.
And we'll be back right after these promos and talk more specifically about cosplay.
Sweet!
Well then, Scott, can you do me a favor?
What's that?
I've got an episode coming. Let's see. It's called Magnus Remembers Superman Returns, so don't listen to that episode. It's all part of my Superman Begins, like, miniseries that I'm going through, or was going through. This is all part of the lead-up to Man of Steel coming out on Blu-ray, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've got two little interludes. The first... Lucy, shut the f*** up! Sorry about that, it's the dog.
Trend is Magnus punches reality at twotruefreaks.com. Discussion about comics, movies, and TV shows. Trend is Magnus punches reality every Tuesday at twotruefreaks.com.
No animals were harmed in the making of this promo.
And we're back. How are you feeling, Dad?
I think I'll be okay.
Okay. Well, now we're going to talk about the second half of our episode concept, cosplay.
So exactly what do we mean by cosplay?
Cosplay is a portmanteau of costume and play. So the concept is that you are going to dress up as a specific character in a costume and portray them when you go to the con. And that's different from like Halloween, where you would dress up as witch or cop.
Generic ghost.
Exactly. You can't go to a con dressed as generic ghost. You have to go as Blinky from Pac-Man. There's a certain sort of specificity that you must be a specific character from a specific piece of media that you're trying to represent to the best of your ability.
Now, from an early age, you have been interested in dressing up, making your own costumes.
Yep. I've prided myself on actually making my own costumes for Halloween since I was pretty young. That I don't always dress up, but when I decide to dress up, I usually want to go in something I've actually made for myself.
We think you started this trend maybe when you were 6 or 7?
Yeah, something like that. That our church, when I was really little, had a little costume contest that you were supposed to dress up as a character from the Bible, and you know, you would go and compete, and the winner got like a bag of M&Ms or something, I don't know. And I decided, Angel, Virgin Mary, no, that's all too simple. I decided I was going to go as David, Not King David. David the Shepherd.
Same guy earlier in his career.
Yes, same guy. But I made myself a tunic and a shepherd's crook and a lyre and a slingshot. And I was all decked out to go. And I lost to an angel who probably bought her costume. And I swear I'm not bitter.
The good thing is 15 years later, you hardly remember the details.
Oh, it's true.
And that's what's important.
It's true. It's an awesome harp. I made it out of rubber bands and a coat hanger.
It was actually a really good costume. I like the slingshot, too.
Yeah, it was nice.
Because even though you weren't fighting the giant then, we knew it was in your future.
Oh, yes.
Now, I have a Halloween story as well.
Oh, well.
My cosplay history is not as extensive as yours.
Right.
But I did make my own costume for Halloween when I was maybe 10 or 12.
Nice.
Because I remember where we were living, so it's definitely in that time frame. And I, of course, made a comic book style costume, but it was my own creation.
Mm-hmm.
I was the Blue Boma. That's supposed to be an Australian accent, if you can't tell.
Wow.
I was the Blue Boma.
Wow.
I was an Australian villain. So I had a blue towel tied around my neck, blue pants, blue shirt, pretty much what I wear every day now, except for the towel around my neck. But the key was that I had a little Dixie cup on my belt, and in it, we were living overseas at the time, in a, let's say, fireworks-friendly nation. And so I had, and so for very cheap, you could buy little itty-bitty firecrackers, as well as these things, I can't remember what they're called, but little cracker balls almost,
like
we call
cherry
them.
Bombs or something?
Yeah, little teeny tiny that you'd throw them down and they'd just go pop. I mean, very, very small, maybe get a little puff of smoke. So I had those in my little Dixie cup. So I'd be the Blue Boma and then throw down my psh, and
I'm just going to say, it didn't determine your future, but it does explain a lot about you.
Hail Doom?
Hail Doom.
So that's about the extent of my cosplay career. I didn't even dress up that much as on Halloween as an adult. But I do think that's one effect of the anime con and comic con becoming a little more mainstream.
Right.
Is that dressing up for these events is become a little more common, and certainly at some Dragon Con and others.
Yes.
You're in the vast minority if you're not dressed up for
exactly.
Certain events or on certain days.
Mm-hmm. There is even a little bit of, I would say, loving superiority that you can feel, that if you're in costume, that you get to sort of raise an eyebrow at the normals. Like, what's a mundane doing in here? Why aren't they in costume? It's at the very least, get a black t-shirt and print out a picture of a hammer and glue it to your chest. Like, you got to do... got to do something. You can't just walk in wearing an AC/DC shirt. You got to have a wig or a staff or something. You can't. It's like going to a business meeting in a t-shirt. It's just wrong.
It was when we moved to Ohio when you were about 9 or 10 that opportunities to dress up presented themselves more regularly. And one of those events that we've been to between you, me, and Mom, in some combination, we've probably been to 10 of the last 15 Ohio Renaissance festivals.
Yes.
And similar to some cons, there's an acceptance if you dress up, and there's an acceptance if you don't dress up.
It's true, true.
But you've gone the last 4 or 5 times in various types of costumes.
Right. And that is something I was quite lucky in college. I was associated with the Medieval and Renaissance Recreational Combat Association, which is not the Society for Creative Anachronisms. We are not LARPers.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
There's a little bit wrong with
that. I know many wonderful people who want to LARP. But that is not what we did. But as part of our club funding every year is that we would request money to go to the Ohio Renaissance Festival. So I got to go for free a couple of years, which was amazing. And I got to go with a bunch of my friends, and many of us made our costumes together. there is something about the actual making and crafting of a character and an outfit and a costume all sort of in one that really resonates with me and with several of my friends as well, who also like to cosplay and things like that, go to Renaissance festivals. I have been interested in costuming specifically since I was about 10, because when I was 10, we got the extended edition of the Fellowship of the Ring, and it changed my life because I watched the special features for that film over and over and over and over and over again, specifically the ones with Nyla Dixon, who is my personal costuming hero, who designed all of the costumes in The Lord of the Rings, and would talk at length about her process and about how they made things and about how they made things look a certain way and how important dye can be for changing the feel of a color. And it just got me really passionately interested in making clothes. And so I took a bunch of sewing classes, a bunch of crafting classes, dyeing, weaving, things like that. There's something like tangible and visceral about actually making your own clothes and the way that that influences a character. If you're making a character from scratch, something a lot of my friends do when they go to the Renaissance Festival is sort of come up with a character and be like, oh, I am a tavern wench who has been studying magic in her off time, so I'm going to wear a bunch of these little totems and bags of herbs, but then also have the push-up corset and the frilly shirt and that sort of thing. And making those sorts of conscious choices about how clothes influence a character and vice versa, I love it.
Now, Renaissance Festival would technically not be a convention.
Right.
But I do think the increasing popularity of Renfests has sort of gone hand in hand with the idea of single focus conventions.
Right.
And whether it's Doctor Who conventions like Gallifrey 1 or 221B, the Sherlock Holmes themed conventions, Bill Willingham organized a Fables Con a few years ago. There's a Ice and Fire convention actually here in Ohio as well, which is about the George R.R. Martin books as well as the HBO Game of Thrones series, sort of right. both and either. So I sort of like those single focus or single issue conventions. I think it just shows that conventions are a growing area of interest, that there are single properties that can sustain an entire weekend of events and panels and discussions and gaming sessions and so on.
And I mean, I think probably the most famous of these is the Penny Arcade Expo, which was started by the creators of Penny Arcade, and it was specifically a convention about their web comics and like associated web series and stuff like that. But then it has grown. I think it's only been going for about 7 years, something like that. And it has grown to not quite Comic-Con levels, but near Comic-Con influence for anything that has to do with video gaming, board gaming, dice gaming, like anything that has to do with games has really been looking for a place at PAX. And I think there's now even like a PAX East and PAX West, because it got so big they had to split it into two conventions. Like, that, to me, is the part that's most insane. Because at least with Comic-Con, it was, let's take the entirety of comics-dom and elevate it to the entirety of nerd-dom, versus let's take fandom for one website and grow it to be all gaming experiences of all types.
You talk about gaming conventions.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big gaming conventions is also here near us in Central Ohio. And you went to Origins.
I did.
Gaming convention once.
Once. I went this past summer.
Yeah, I would say neither one of us are hardcore gamers.
No.
You a little bit more than I am. But what was your experience at a gaming con as compared to anime cons, comic cons?
Well, I will say this, comparing Mid-Ohio Con, which is pretty much specifically comics, less so now than it used to be, but that's mostly comics. And then OhioCon and Origins, they were very similar.
Okay.
Partially because they're all hosted in the same place.
Yeah, they're all in the same city, so you're going to get literally a Venn diagram overlap of literally the same people.
Exactly. A lot of the same artists come to the Artist Alley for all three of the cons. A lot of the same dealers come repeatedly. But it was interesting that the focus shifted as far as what was being sold, what sort of, if there were panels. I'm trying to remember. I believe that Origins did not have any panels. What it did have was all of the panel rooms were converted into game rooms.
Right.
So instead of having the way that OhioCon does is there's an entire wing of panel rooms and an entire wing that is viewing rooms. They do like a more sort of a participatory panels and classes. Those are all in one wing. All three of those wings for Origins were gaming tables, but one wing was Dungeons and Dragons and pen and paper role-playing games. One was dice games, like specifically dice. One was video games. One was cards. So you could go down one of the hallways and there was Magic, Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon, etc. In each of the rooms was all different games that had five or six tables of different people playing. And then in the other wing, there were a bunch of TVs set up with all sorts of different video game systems from like N64 all the way up to PS3. It was a really interesting experience, but since I'm not a gamer, I didn't really go there that much for the games section. I did lose a couple of my friends who wanted to go play Call of Cthulhu. Didn't see them for like 5 hours. They came back. They had this weirdly haunted look, you know, like you do.
That happens. But yeah, you were mostly in the dealer room.
Mm-hmm. I was basically there for the shopping.
And the wandering around aspects.
But what was interesting was that even though, you know, the dealer's room shifted and there was some overlap, there were still some people there that one of my favorite companies of all time, that's a hattery in the area. They were there, and so I tried on a bunch of hats. There's a local corset maker who goes to Renaissance Festival, OhioCon, Origins, everything. So I got to talk to them for a little while. But I was actually a little surprised how similar it still was. There were fewer people in costume. I think Origin probably had the fewest. But it was about 30%.
Yeah, that was going to be my one of my questions, sort of bringing our topics together. My impression was that cosplay would be most prevalent at the anime convention,
mm-hmm.
next most at the comic convention, and least of all at the gaming convention. Is that assumption close to reality?
Yes, but what I'd say is that at Origins, you probably saw about 30% people in costume. At Mid-OhioCon, you probably saw about 50-60%. And at OhioCon, it was like 80. When I went to OhioCon this past year, it's coming up again in a couple of weeks. So in 2013, it was the first time that my roommate had been. And she didn't have any form of costume. And I was like, eh, that's fine, you know. There's several people that don't go in costume. It's not like you're going to be ostracized. You're not going to be the only one there out of costume. I went in costume as Zatanna. And then she came just in her regular t-shirt and jeans. And at about an hour and a half in, she was like, I feel really uncomfortable. And I was like, why? Because you don't really watch anime? She's like, no, I feel underdressed. We need to go to the dealer's room right now. I have to buy a wig. I was like, okay. She went and she bought a wig and a little blue bobbed wig. It was very cute. And from that point on, she was totally confident.
Was this something, do you think, that she was just sort of putting on herself, that she felt uncomfortable? Or do you think she was made uncomfortable, if you understand what I mean?
Yeah. Now, I think it was more her. It's one of those things that it might feel slightly uncomfortable. Again, it's sort of like walking into a room when you're told it's going to be business casual, and so you go in a button-up shirt and jeans, and everyone else there is in a suit jacket. Like, you just feel underdressed. It was more like that. But she had a great time. I will say this, is she comes from a much less nerdy family. That
right.
She is quite nerdy, but she is the only nerd in her family. So she had never had the Renaissance Festival, Mid-OhioCon growing up experience that I had, where I'm just like, yeah, cons are part of my annual routine. Like, I just go to them, and they're totally normal for me. That the first con that she had actually been to was Origin. Like, that was
right.
That was her introduction. And then to go from Origin to OhioCon, 50% more people are dressed up. She just felt a little out of place.
So you mentioned that you're going to be going back to the Anime Con.
I will be.
OhioCon in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
What's your costume going to be, and how far along are you in its assembly?
Before I talk too much about my costume, I do want to make a couple comments about sort of cosplay culture.
So just buying a blue wig counted as a costume? How exactly does that work? What counts as in costume and out of costume?
Now that's actually an interesting question because it's sort of flexible. That there's what we would call sort of like con uniform, in quotations. And that's just something to signify, like, yes, I am a nerd. I haven't wandered in here on accident. A blue wig and a Big Bang Theory t-shirt or a Doctor Who shirt and a sonic screwdriver in your back pocket or, you know, a Tom Baker scarf and a towel. Just something to sort of signify your nerdiness to other people.
One thing that I've seen, and I think, again, this might be more at the anime cons, is that even though there's a range of costumes from do-it-yourself, homemade out of the, with stuff you've bought from the Goodwill, to stuff you've bought at a more expensive place, upscale homemade versus purchased, there's a whole range of types of costumes, that there seems to be an acceptance, not so much judginess. Have you found that? Because you've always done homemade, pretty budget-related costumes.
Right. That's what's interesting is now cosplay and cosplay culture has actually been getting a decent amount of recognition by the greater world. You know, if you're a nerd, and if you're listening to this, you probably are, that means you're at least aware of this thing called the Sci-Fi Network. Sci-Fi, this past season, did a show called Heroes of Cosplay, which talked about Yaya Han, who is one of the most famous cosplayers and costumers today, and several other sort of up-and-coming cosplayers, talking about their process for picking a costume, making a costume, wearing a costume, and competing. Like, that is actually sort of a separate thing, that you have dressing up to sort of just feel comfortable at the con. And then there is competition. I usually fall somewhere in the middle. I have never actually competed in a contest because the contests tend to have pretty strict rules. Depending on what con you're going to, they'll be a little different. But I believe the ones for OhioCon is you must have a prepared skit of some variety and you must have made a minimum of 50% of your costume yourself because they don't want people going out and buying the $200 deluxe Thor costume and just wearing that and a wig, competing against someone like Yaya Han who made their own Queen of Hearts dress from scratch and like purchased the lace to hand sew the petticoat and dye printed the crown and all these sorts of really elaborate hands-on methods.
Now, is there backlash among the amateur cosplayers about the semi-pro or pro cosplayers? I say that because sort of in the same way that podcasting was once a do-it-yourself, purely amateur medium, and now you've got ESPN and NPR and these major broadcasters who are doing quote-unquote podcasts. Is there sort of a comparison to the high-end or semi-pro costumers slash cosplayers?
There is to a certain extent, and we saw some of that in Heroes of Cosplay, that there was some backlash that there are some cosplayers who actually travel, like regionally. Like, for example, Yaya Han, when she was, you know, that was a big deal that over the course of the TV show, she decided to get back into making costumes and competing instead of just judging. But Yaya Han will actually buy plane tickets and compete in Atlanta and California and Texas and Maine and Minnesota and Colorado and Ohio. And to a certain extent, there is a little bit of bias, maybe, to someone from out of town coming and competing at your competition. I have never run into that at OhioCon, but then again, I have never competed. I've never hung out that much with people who have competed. What a lot of people do in that sort of in-between range is cosplay for photo shoot.
Okay.
Which is a step up from just, I want to wear something that sort of vaguely looks like Tom Baker. Like, I'm just going to wear a big brown coat and a long scarf and a floppy hat. Where there is a little more attention to detail and accuracy. And people will come up with these elaborate costumes and stage photo shoots and fake fights and pose with other cosplayers. Things like that. And that's...
Now, remember when you went to a HyaCon 2 years ago as a steampunk version of Starfire?
Yep.
That you got stopped for a couple of photos. I can't remember if last year as Zatanna, if you got stopped for photos, but that's kind of fun. Is that...
I got stopped for one photo with Zatanna because there were two other people there that were dressed as Zatanna. And one of them was, I will say, a little snobby, was sort of dismissive of the other two of us. And
I assume you two were a little more homemade.
Exactly. That hers, she had actually like bought a like the sexy magician assistant outfit and was wearing that. Whereas the two of us, we just sort of had tailcoat and a black vest and a little short skirt and stuff like that. And she was just sort of a little bit snide. And so the other girl came over to me and was like, "That wasn't acceptable. You and me, we're going to take pictures and screw her. We're going to be awesome." So I got one picture with the other Zatanna. The previous year, I was actually really impressed that I got recognized as anybody. The original idea when I started making my steampunk Starfire was that a couple of my other friends were also going to do sort of steampunked versions of characters. One of my roommates was going to go as a steampunked up Raven because she had this short purple wig. She ended up not doing that and went as Ramona from Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, which was fine, but it did just mean that I was the only one. And so I was like, I get it if no one recognizes me, but the fact that two people actually recognized me and came and asked for pictures with me was really uplifting. This had actually happened once before when I went as Athena from Clash of the Titans, because I had bought a little mechanical Bubo for really cheap at a costume store. It was the last one. I got him for like $15. I already had a toga at home, and so I borrowed one of my friend's swords and a helmet and did my hair up, and I went as Athena. And there was a zombie yellow lantern who was at OhioCon and came running from the other side of the convention to hug me and get her picture taken with me. And she was in like full prosthetics, face paint, you know, handmade leotard and boots and gloves, and I was so impressed. And she wanted her picture with me, and I wanted my picture with her. And
that was a win-win scenario.
It was a win-win scenario. But that was actually, that's sort of one of those things, is the biggest compliment that you can get as a cosplayer is when another cosplayer wants your picture.
So you mentioned that OhioCon is again in a couple weeks as of this recording.
Yep.
So what does the 2014 costume entail?
I recently got into the animated show Adventure Time, and I love Adventure Time. I have decided that I am going to go as Marshall Lee, who is the male gender-swapped version of one of the main characters, Marceline. He's a vampire and a rock star, and so he dresses basically the way that I dress on an everyday basis. So he wears a red flannel shirt, jeans, and some red trainers. So I'm going to be going as him. And actually making the costume this year was surprisingly difficult because I am quite cheap and I did not want to buy red Converse. So I had to make some fake red Converse.
And that involved gray Converse and red Sharpies.
Yes, and they actually came out surprisingly well, and I was pretty impressed with myself. And the interesting thing about the Marshall cosplay is, like I said, I already had many of the pieces that I was going to wear. I already had some dark wash jeans, and I had bought a red flannel shirt like the day before I decided what I was going to wear, and I just figured, oh, this works. I already have a lot of these things. There is actually a name for that, and there is a term called closet play, which is if you're going to dress up as a character who does just wear clothes. Like if you're going to dress up as Doug from Nickelodeon's Doug, he just wears a white shirt, khaki shorts, and a green vest. Like if you can find those three items, you've got your costume. What with the economy not being awesome, Goodwill clothes not being terribly expensive, the idea of making a costume out of just whatever you have lying around has become more and more popular. There are whole panels that are based around that. With the rise of steampunk, mm-hmm. cosplay has gotten a lot of visibility because there are a lot of people who dress up as steampunks for conventions and then just wear the clothes separately during their daily life because it's a wool vest. Just wear that with some jeans. And
everyone has a pair of welder goggles that they wear on a daily basis.
I know, right? I mean, I do. That sort of idea of outfits that sort of walk that line in and out of cosplay has become popular. Steampunked versions of things and taking just clothes that you find and cutting them up a little bit or dyeing them or gluing a fringe around the edge in order to make it a different piece. That sort of creativity is something that is really encapsulated in a lot of cosplay.
You mentioned the panels at Ahayacon and some of those events. Do you know at this point which of those you're interested in, or...
This is the only beef that I have with OhioCon, is that they are very, 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 very bad about releasing their schedule. Which I get, because on the one hand, they want to have as late a deadline as possible for you to sign up and have a panel. Since it is a slightly smaller convention, it also means that the guests that they get are slightly smaller.
And if they get a better offer somewhere else, the last minute, or...
Last year, when I went, the best panel that I went to by far was a voice actors panel, and it was Kyle Abair from Dragon Ball Z, and two guys who were the voice of Gurr and Zim from Invader Zim, and one other voice actor whose name is and roles are escaping me, but it was just the four of them talking about what it's like to be a professional but barely known voice actor, and, you know, had one of them gotten a job for that weekend,
that's right,
they would have dropped the panel like a hot potato and gone to go make actual money. But it does just mean I have no idea what the guest list is. I have no idea what the panel schedule is.
Well, hopefully you'll have a good time. And
fingers crossed.
And maybe you can come back in a future episode and report on your Ahayacon 2014 experience.
Yes. The one thing that I do know I'm going to be going to is I have several friends who are into martial arts of various varieties. There is a cosplay combat panel that is more a class than a panel, but whatever, that I know several of my friends are going to be attending, where you choreograph and act out a fight sequence with several other people while in costume. And that also has those sorts of ideas about portraying a fighting style that is similar to your character and using your character to influence that and how to not hurt people and how to take a fall and all that sort of thing. So that's going to be pretty fun to watch. I go every year to watch my friends fight each other.
Well, to wrap up this episode, Em, we've talked about a lot of the conventions that we've been to. One of the common denominators between a lot of those cons is that they're really close to where we live.
Yes. We do not travel for cons.
So if you could dream big, sort of what would the dream con attending be? For me, obviously, it would have been maybe San Diego Comic-Con, obviously, for any comic fan. But I think that's almost grown too big for... Well, I know that that's grown too big for me personally.
Your dream con would be San Diego 6 years ago?
Maybe 10 years ago.
Okay.
But now it might be one of the big Chicago cons, or Dragon Con, or I've heard really good things about the one in Seattle, the Emerald City Con.
Yes, Emerald City Con.
So based on your interests, what would be your dream con? In other words, what do we have to start saving up for now?
Dragon Con.
What is it about Dragon Con?
Dragon Con is actually one of the biggest cosplay-centric conventions. I said that, you know, at OhioCon about 80% of people dress up. At Dragon Con, like 95% of people dress up. And there are multiple contests for all different levels. The meetups for cosplayers is huge. I'm pretty sure that the opening ceremony is all of the cosplayers in a giant parade through the city. Like, you know, even if I just go dressed as Marsha Lee and I've just got my red flannel and my things and I've got my face painted up and I've got my hair swooshed over, I can call and talk to Dragon Con and be like, hey, I am going to be an Adventure Time cosplayer. May I march in the parade with the rest of the Adventure Time characters? And they'll say, okay. And I'll show up at the right time and get in line, and it's just a giant march through the city of... Dragon Con is like Geek Pride Parade, where it's just all of the fandoms consolidated into one singular march, just showing off their nerdiness to the world, and it's one of my favorite things in the world.
Yeah, we did talk about the trend in single item cons. I think Dragon Con is sort of the exact opposite.
Yep.
It's the place where everything goes, anything goes.
Exactly. But something that's so cool about Dragon Con is that it also does that sort of single focus, that there is an entire linguistics track that teaches Klingon, Sindarin Elvish, Quenyan Elvish, like four or five other made-up languages. I'm pretty sure they even have a class on Dothraki by this point. You can learn any sort of made-up sci-fi fantasy language. There are panels on every single canceled and currently running show ever. There are panels on book series and movies and comic books. And regardless of what your interest is, there is a panel for that.
I know at one point, I don't know if it's currently ongoing, but it probably is, there was an academic track.
Yes.
At Dragon Con.
Yes.
Where actual university professors were presenting their academic papers on nerd and pop culture topics.
Which I so want to go to. Like, I can't even... Oh my gosh. It's just... It is my dream con. Now, again, that's my dream con. What I actually want to save up for is I really want to go to MAGFest, which is the Music and Gaming Festival, and is not a convention proper. But I really want to go because that is basically the annual meetup for thatguywiththeglasses.com, that the various people that produce for thatguywiththeglasses.com all go to Alexandria, Virginia, and just sort of take over and have a couple of panels, but also have a bunch of meetups and autograph signings and
live versions of their shows, all those things.
So many awesome things. They do contests, and they have an annual Nerf war. You know, they throw awesome parties and buy a bunch of donuts, and just, like, it's just a fun time. And then, whenever I'm not at something that's That Guy with the Glasses related, I can go see a Viking metal band, or a rapper who draws all of his lyrics from his Dungeons & Dragons campaign, or folk music that's set to the story of the Lord of the Rings, or 8-bit versions of famous pop songs. Like, it's a 4-day role-playing game and convention and giant massive music festival and chance
nerd
to socialize.
And nerd gathering.
It is nerd mecca. And I really want to go at some point.
Well, it is nice to have hopes and dreams and goals and aspirations, but one of the nice things is that we do have a fair number of conventions pretty close by.
Mm-hmm. Close enough that I don't have to rent a hotel room.
That does actually help a lot.
Save you so much money. Though, you do also miss out on so much of what I would call the central con experience of cramming yourself 8 deep in a hotel room and only one shower between the entire lot of you. And
I believe there was a year where Star Wars Celebration was in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an unofficial Two True Freaks meetup there. And I seem to remember some drunken podcasts coming out of the cramped hotel room.
Excellent. That's so much of the con experience. Because I will say this, con funk is not pleasant.
Nor is con crud.
And no. So, in conclusion, take your vitamin C, take a shower, good God, bring deodorant, but it's all about just pushing through any sort of uncomfortableness and having to deal with people in close proximity and just enjoying being surrounded by this many people who share your passion.
And I think for advice, we can leave our listeners with Mer Lafferty's 3-2-1 rule.
Mm-hmm.
And Mer Lafferty, podcaster and sci-fi author, has her three rules of cons, 3-2-1, meaning that in every 24-hour period, you should get 3 hours of sleep, 2 meals, and 1 shower.
Words to live by, my friends. Words to live by.
Well, Emily, enjoy your upcoming convention.
I plan to.
If in particular you have some convention experiences you'd like to share with us.
Or advice.
Or advice. Shoot us an email at relativelygeeky@gmail.com.
If you like what we're doing, leave us a review and or rating in iTunes. Search for Relatively Geeky or The Short Box Showcase.
And most importantly, thanks for listening.
Bye, guys. If you like what you're doing, not what you're doing.
No, if you like what you're doing, listening to us on a podcast right now.
Please keep doing it. Did that actually make a sentence?
I'm not sure.
I don't think it did. Is the term portmanteau?
Ooh, I think so. Well,
because it's a smush word.
Yes.
I believe
that is correct.
I believe it's close enough.
Good enough. A little misgrammar. Last year would have been 2013.
Oh my gosh, it's 2014 now. Yeah. It's so weird.
For starters, I wanted to talk about each of ours. What's the grammar for that?
Each of our.
I wanted to start talking about each of our history with comic book conventions.
Each of our histories. I think.
I'm a professor.
I think that's...
I don't know if we're talking.
I think the plural goes in the noun, not the verb. Because it's a collective plural verb.
Are you going to be like this the whole time?
I took a linguistics class! You paid for that linguistics class!
Isn't it a little early to already have material for the end of the show?
Shh.